interrupting the current neo-Ukrainian climate challenge, behaviorally controlled, energy-starved, alien-invaded, nuclear-glowing, postulated cricketism to bring you behind the woodshed. This is Cricketude Busting episode BTWRLM676. And remember, being free is not a spectator sport, so get you behind the woodshed and bring those miscreants with you. And we're continuing donation season. It's going to be quite a while. Need your help. Need the donations. Go find the links. Either send a coffee, a KOFI donation, if you will, or send more. We would like to have more. We have quite a few $100 worth of material, hardware to buy. Again, it's like I said, it occurred to me, I think it was last week, all the hardware we've been running on for the last couple of years is timing out. So it didn't quite dawn on me until just this last week why these were dying on us. So once they're fixed, then we're going to go for a lot longer, except to the point that they're working a lot harder. They're doing a whole lot more now. Sound and the crew is really putting some stuff together to try and keep things going. So if you would, please donate. And to those of you that don't have anything more maybe than content, donate that. Get in touch with Sound and get yourself a slot in the network and produce your material and tell the world what you think it's about. And I don't know that there's anybody that's got all the answers, but we don't know what parts we all each have either that may actually be working. That's what I try to do, bring to the broadcast everything I've done in the past that worked or didn't, because we learn from our mistakes, or how people made mistakes and how we had to fix it and all this other stuff. There's a lot of work behind it, all that. And it is a lot of work, but it still has to be done. If we have any ideas of, we ever growing up, we were going to be free in a country, whether or not we truly believe that or not, like there was quite a few things that were told me when I was young, and I'm trying to think, looking at him askance saying, no, I'm not so sure if that's really going to work out. Well, there's reasons for our doubt. And some of that's our own apathy, and it's built in our nature. As I've said, the protocols of the elders of Zion will tell us about, forget the political or the accusatory type nature of what that document's about. Go look at it as the frailties of mankind and how people exploit. Maybe you get a different appreciation. Maybe you'll understand more of what I try to do to get us to understand what really it takes to get into being able to learn to discern when we understand we're also being programmed to not be able to, or to get come to biased opinions. We all have those, and they're real hard to break sometimes. Sometimes reality wakes you up, and that's, some of us have had that experience, and we got to see more of what is really going on, and not just bookwork, but how to really make it work, how to deal with someone who's not going away, that seems to have they believe they have all the power in the world, and they're just another guy or a gal in a costume. And we do have to give over some authority, if you will, around, because we're not, as people, we're not all that great. We tend to want to hurt lots of people when it comes down to it. There's lots of people that will do that. Not we tend to, but there's a lot of that going on. And there has to be, apparently, some force that stops it. We're not able, for as much as I would say, we don't need government. I've explained why at least governmental records are real important, in particular our property and our property proofs and rights and the conveyances. And it's really important to have a third-party arbiter. Well, not arbitration, not what they've done today. But where do you put the things that men and women need in their daily effects is kind of what I speak to. You have to invoke all that. And part of that is understanding the black and white, that I believe we are an occupied people. And that's what the occupier speaks through. And if you're in an occupied territory and you don't speak the proper language, then you're going to get the trouble that or is meted out to you. It's pretty simple. When you start talking more closely to it, and they recognize a limitation. Now we might start to get to where there's going to be a more even keel in the justice instead of just us. And then when all that doesn't work, we're already told right in the documentation, and it's not just the United States, but it is part of that founding documents about the right to alter and abolish. And that's always in anybody who has any sovereignty at all, that we have a nation of people that don't want to do much of any of that, and think that tweeting out things or getting on a network and telling people, that conveys the information. It's the action that's going to cause the change. It could be an inaction that causes a change, but it has to be a well-made inaction as well. So, if you will, donate to the network, get all the voices of the hosts of the past to be there for people that haven't heard about all this stuff. And any of you that want to make new content, get in touch with Sound Minds, find the donation buttons. I do appreciate it. It helps out a lot. I know Sound appreciates it in trying to keep Grimner's White Elephant going, and actually I said kind of put a tan on it, actually speed it up a little bit and get it into maybe the Golden Goose in the context of giving people the information they need and let them decide for themselves, not like what we see people deciding for us in the authorita. But as we saw the great Kobe swindle, they made up all the rules and how it was going to go work, and it was all a fraud. All a fraud. Based on a fraud, never change. Can't change when it starts out as a fraud. And you can't be a spectator when someone threatens you with a menace that doesn't exist to hide a real existential threat. Trump warns of a communist menace in 250th U.S. anniversary speech. No, this distractor-in-chief, or captain oblivious in fact, there is even more dangerous political threat than the communist menace, so-called, and it's the public-private partnership fascism. By definition, the joining of corporate and government, the very thing Trump continues to reorganize and rebrand and onshore. And instead of distractor-in-chief, at least as Captain Oblivious, he admits being S-M-A-R-T, but not too intelligent. Well, he doesn't admit to it because he's too stupid to see it, even as it drowns him in the swamp he didn't and isn't going to drain as he promised. In fact, he uses fascism as a life preserver. Then P.T. Barnum Trump proclaims how exceptional and greatest the American three-ring bread and circus is, while every other country brings on the same public-private fascist techno-tyranny, as I've been covering for years. Or as he has said that it seems like a good idea to him, he had no problem with whatever his billionaire boys' insiders tell him is good. Then he tells you he didn't know anything about his 30% increase in wealth since the start of Trump 2.0. Well, because the funds, so-called, are handling his finances, while at the same time not saying those funds or managers are the same chosen billionaire boys' insiders. He'll also say, proving the markets are doing so good, beautiful, great, the greatest, the best ever, while Americans pay the price and into the future. The president has urged Americans to protect their unique identity and, quote, majestic freedom, close quote. Did you hear what Trump just asked for? Instead of him saying the government will be returning to its roots, restoring this country's founding principles and to secure the rights of we the people, no. Instead, he tells people the government will be doing none of that. The government will be continuing its long train of abuses, and that it will be up to we the people to alter or abolish the forms and substance of the odious usurpations which they have grown accustomed but suffer without remedy. Trump is telling Americans to protect their unique identity and majestic freedom from him, the Billionaire Boys Club, and the rest of the swamp, because it isn't going to. U.S. President Donald Trump has delivered a speech from Mount Rushmore as his country marks the 250th anniversary of its Declaration of Independence. Oh, and don't get me started on all that independence moronacy, please. If America ever actually was, we the people failed to keep the republic long ago, despite a spirit willing. It takes more. As we are earnestly told, spirit without works is dead. Quote, the United States of America is the most successful, most accomplished, most exceptional nation ever to exist in human history. This is a humanist's history, the history of monsters without inheritable blood, right? We talked about this over and over again. Humans, monsters without inheritable blood is not, and by definition and law cannot, be the history of a posterity inheriting a republic established by the founding fathers. But, Bertha, there it is, glossing over that abject failure of the republic, but appeal to the myth in the duped. If anyone listening didn't have a direct hand in keeping the republic today, or sufficiently so, despite our best efforts, it's lost. waiting for a people, the men and women of America, not humans, that care. Quote, there is now a resurgence of the communist menace in our land, including from newcomers to our country who embrace ideas totally opposed to our way of life and our great success, close quote, Trump said, comparing the threat of communism to those posed by the two world wars and 9/11. That's right, invoking the boogeyman. I told you this 9/11 is going to be the gift that keeps on giving. I told that to you before the start of the Covey swindle. But it wasn't a communist menace that was being fought during World War I and II, was it? In fact, the purported communists, the Soviets, worked together with America. And it wasn't a communist menace they told us was hiding in the caves in Afghanistan, was it? And it wasn't a communist menace that allowed the evidence of 9/11 destruction to be hauled off and destroyed by Trump's buddy and mayor of New York City, Rudy Giuliani. In fact, it wasn't anything that we were told. And that's how any communist menace is compared. The real and existential threat is something else unmentioned. We're going to give our country its identity back, Trump said at the conclusion of his 30-minute speech. Quote, we're going to give our country its identity back, Trump said at the conclusion of his 30-minute speech. Quote, you do not have to be born here, but you do have to love what we have built. You must love our country, close quote. Well, tell that to Lorenzo Salgado Araújo, who did love our country. The man killed by Trump's unidentifiable immigration gangster goons for no pretty good reason. And I'll get to Lorenzo in a moment. Well, I actually can't get back to him. He's dead. A recent Gallup poll found that only 50% of the U.S. adults said that they were, quote, extremely, close quote, or, quote, very, quote, proud to be American, the lowest level recorded since the pollsters began asking the question in 2001. I'm telling you, this 9/11 is the gift that keeps on giving. Shock treatment over and over and over. Here we are, 2026, and that's the only reference we've got. And they're doing that for a reason, and we the people didn't stop it. Other pollings have suggested that a significant number of Americans did not plan to celebrate July 4th this year, while many doubt that the country's ability to endure another 250 years. What do they mean, 250? Does no one read anymore? We didn't make it the first 250 years. It ended with at least the post-founding father Lincolnized era. And that is documented in the servitude to the federal power in each of the several states. I've read about those, almost every document. Did we forget as well to look behind the curtain too, Toto? The anniversary has also been overshadowed by disputes over whether the festivities have become too closely tied to Trump personally rather than serving as a bipartisan national commemoration. But Trump is part of the Uniparty. And he just said, Americans are on their own. It's the Americans that will have to protect their unique identity and majestic freedom. Because Trump nor the governments are going to, but more importantly, have not. And you knows them when you sees them, right, Dr. Francis Lieber? Now, which anniversary was overshadowed? The one that died with Lincolnization or the post-government terrorism era? Soon to be Pax Judaica terrorism of no peace, if we're not there already. Remember, if peace means war for everyone other than the chosen of the world. And we're prayed to be not of the world, because the synagogue of Satan is nowhere else. And more federal crimes here against mankind and the Declaration of Independence, when you go read it and what it was made for, to the killing. The son of the man killed by ICE was close to getting legal status. And I want to have you see the word man here, and I think this is an important distinction, as I make it all the time. It did make the title. The son refers to him. He doesn't say he's a human. But the son, man killed by ICE, another one. He says his father may have feared agents in unmarked vehicles wanted to steal his tools. And this story becomes more and more one. I have a video after this. I'll give you a link in the blogcaster. when you hear more of the story, put yourself in this position and be the man, be the family, in the community, a long standing community, be someone who worked for 35 years in a place and have then understand that you're being, what you think, chased by an unmarked car full of guys. What are you going to do? You're taking a crew, you are a business owner, and you're taking a crew of guys to do their work that they've been doing for 35 years in their own community. The son says this guy was getting his legal status together. It means he was an immigrant. And this is my point about the due process. He was doing the process. He should be left alone. They're claiming, ICE is claiming, he wasn't the target. Well, he ends up being the target. He ends up being a dead target. His son said his father may have feared the agents in the unmarked vehicle. Why are we still allowing and not having outrage over cops that do not identify themselves? This used to be a very big deal that seemed to be swept under the rug since 9/11 as well. A Mexican national fatally shot by an immigration and customs enforcement officer in Houston had no criminal convictions during his decades living in the U.S. and was driving a crew to a home building site when he was killed, his family and a Texas congresswoman said Wednesday. Lorenzo Salgado Araujo, working toward securing legal status in the U.S. and knew what to do if stopped by ICE, his son said. Ronaldo Segaldo said his father may have been scared that the people in unmarked vehicles were coming to steal the tools he used for 35 years to build homes from sunrise to sunset so he could send his three American sons to college. And he did. And they did. Quote, he did not deserve to die. He did not deserve to be reduced to a headline of a Mexican man shot and killed by ICE. He deserved to live a quiet life as Lorenzo Salgado Araujo, a husband, a father, and a job creator of dozens of men who also wanted the American dream, close quote, Salgado said during his news conference. The shooting happened Tuesday in Magnolia Park, a neighborhood that has been a hub for Houston's Mexican-American community for a century. Salgado Araujo was shot after he ignored commands and attempted to ram an officer who fired his weapon in self-defense, the Department of Homeland Security said Tuesday in a statement. Where have we heard this story over and over and over? And you get the video, and it's not the way they said. And we're still allowing these people to breathe air and rule our lives. ICE officers were targeting him because he was living in the country without legal permission, according to the department which oversees ICE. Let's rewind that just a little bit. They were targeting him because he was living in the country without legal permission. He was in the process. That's legal permission. So we know there's a lie right there. The man's car struck an ICE vehicle, the department added. Democrat U.S. Representative Sylvia Garcia said Salgado Araujo had no criminal conviction. Houston firefighters said he was shot in the abdomen. He died at a hospital. Three other men appeared to be detained as Salgado Araujo lay moaning on the ground, according to his son, who said one of them was his uncle and that no one has heard from any of them since. Salgado Araujo met his wife as a teenager in Mexico. They came to America and built their own home in Houston with help from friends and family who worked on his crew. His wife made his lunch before he left for the day and had a hearty meal ready when he came home. He would listen to music and pet his dog on the porch, Salgado said. Quote, after nearly 35 years of working to give us the American dream, he made the choice to begin the process of obtaining his American dream through a work permit, close quote, Salgado said. Quote, we dotted every I, crossed every T, filled every document, and attended every appointment. He was close to obtaining his legal status, close quote. Folks, are you listening to this? What else is someone supposed to do but get in the process and do it? Totally not what Trump was saying he was fighting, people just flooding in. Whoever let them in. It's like you're in the middle of doing an application process, and then someone decides that they don't like you. You're not legal quite yet, and they hunt you down and shoot you. But I'm hanging this little thing about, I mentioned it when I come into this part. Go read one of the reasons that the Declaration of Independence was created. It had to do with immigration. That was part of the Declaration of Independence to allow it. Salgado Araújo had a biometric scan and fingerprints done earlier this year, his son said, and had carefully studied what to do if ICE pulled him over. If he would have known them. If he was speeding away, it was probably because he feared having his tools stolen, his son said. Quote, had my father seen an emblem of ICE or an emblem that says anything about law enforcement agency, my father would have complied, close quote, his son said. And I guess part of me is just, I'm so angry at this. Whole lots of things I don't have words for. I've known a lot of Mexican people. I don't think I've ever been attacked by anyone, any of them. They're all hardworking. They all try to comply with the law. They do not want to get on the opposite side of the law, particularly the ones with families, with businesses and all that. So this is particularly insultive to me of all the Mexican people that I've worked with, a couple of them helping me. They didn't have to, just the kind of people that they were and are, helping me to get along when I was having trouble, showing me tricks of a trade, if you will. Didn't have to do any of that. And that friend, he was also very careful to understand what to do around cops. We talk about it periodically, and a lot, actually. He didn't want to get in trouble. They just want to get their life and keep making that American dream as best they can. So it's quite the insult to hear this, read this through, in particular to know that they knew him. He wasn't a question. Federal officers have not released a video of images of the shooting or the alleged damages to the vehicle. Salgado on Tuesday joined civil rights groups and Democratic officials in urging federal authorities to release all the footage and other information it has on the shooting. And where are the Republicrats here? Where's the Republicans? Where's everybody? In several other shootings involving federal officials, initial descriptions by immigration officers have sometimes been contradicted later by video evidence. Every one so far, it seems to me. Harris County District Attorney Sean Tier said the Salgado Araújo family and the community deserve the truth. The federal authorities are exclusively handling the investigation at this time. And I'm not so sure that that's the only thing that can happen when the state's supposed to be involved. And this is the potential problem with them, with someone not being any state citizen at that time. But I'll send you also a link, give you a link, the description of which is Lorenzo Salgado Araújo was gunned down by ICE in the streets of Houston, leaving behind a devastated family and an angry community. The CEO of LULAC, L-U-L-A-C, Juan Proano, who joins Katie Fang for the very latest on Lorenzo's killing, including exclusive information about how the family is being thwarted from even being able to secure Lorenzo's body for a funeral. Now, don't be confused by what I say here, but I disagree with the host's claim of the dehumanization of Lorenzo Araújo, this animalification of good people by bad government, is the humanization of good men and women into monsters, to justify what humanistic fascist government does to good people. This is not dehumanizing. It's the humanization of mankind against nature and nature's God, so declared. But for street language, understanding, she's correct. Or what everyone would think, oh, the humanization stuff. No, I'll go with it, but that's not what I believe. They're taking men and women and they're humanizing, they're monsterizing, they're animalizing them so they can degrade them. The Trump administration, as the others and all police forces, are in the business of humanizing people. And the Supreme Court just allowed targeting people based on perceived race lawful, if you can believe this usurpation of law and good principles. And Americans, and almost Americans here, are not immune from the same not too pretty and good treatment, or Miramar Martinez eyes too. For those of you thinking you don't do nothing wrong, in this Breads and Circuses post-founding Father Lincoln's terror era arena, everyone but the chosen are presumed criminals, and it's not a non-spectator sport. And you are the potential targeted prey of these damn dirty apes. And since the Epstein Files is still a thing, and the World Cup distraction is over and didn't last long enough, let's change the channel back to Iran until people forget the Epstein Files. U.S.-Iran ceasefire is over, says Trump. The U.S. president said that there is no point in talks about resuming strikes in response to, quote, unwarranted aggression, close quote, in the Strait of Hormuz. Well, let us look closer at this word salad from the aggressor-in-chief. Quote, there is no point in talks after resuming strikes in response to the, quote, unwarranted aggression in the Strait of Hormuz. Well, that's right, isn't it? There is no need for a ceasefire to the unwarranted aggressions Trump started, continues, and never had any intention to stop because, well, Satanyahu. So Trump, being no deal kind of guy, and the artifice of the deal, what's the point to continue the facade, especially when there's a profitable order to be made out of the chaos, whether privately or to boost his ego, or to have people grovel to him, or his billionaire boys insider club market trading in turmoil, while we all pay for it at the pump or otherwise? And do we yet know the actual value of a barrel of turmoil? Trump might be a way to finally figure that out. And so Trump sees no point to an actual ceasefire, even if Satanyahu doesn't have him by his nicked ear, whether or not by blood ritual or WWE SmackDown extravaganza. Speaking on the sidelines of the NATO summit in Ankara, Turkey, Trump lashed out at the Iranian leadership, calling them scum, cuckoo, vicious, sick, and violent people, and confirmed that the ceasefire was over. Yeah, tell us how you really feel. Did Trump ever grow up? I mean, sticks and stones at all. And the tantrum when you don't get your way with actual adults in the room. Quote, I don't want to deal with them. I'll speak to our negotiators that want to negotiate, but as far as I'm concerned, it's just a waste of time dealing with them. They're liars, he said. Spoken like a true liar in chief. I can say the same about criminals and clowns, form of government destructive of the ends of securing rights or only to the few or chosen, that I don't want to deal with and institute a new government at home. Do we, the people, take Trump's lead and begin a kinetic action against everything we don't want to do just cause? Or do we need just cause? And hasn't Trump given we, the people, that just cause when acting just cause he don't wanna? And if not, why not? And these now unnamed negotiators Trump refers to is a glaring tell. A plausible Zionist first and profit-taking deniability, don't you think? These corrupt bastages are pretty good. And I have to give that much to them. But sometimes adults have to do things they don't want to do, especially when they're caught doing very bad, not good things, or where they cause a bellwether war to nowhere against someone that has had enough of the foolishness. Iranian media reported that one of the tankers, which was linked to Qatar, was attacked as it was sailing through the strait and, quote, ignoring repeated warnings, close quote. The government source told Press TV that any traffic through the choke point should be approved by Tehran. As tensions escalated, the Islamic Revolution Guard Corps said it launched strikes on dozens of U.S. military assets in Bahrain and Kuwait, adding that it downed another American MQ-9 drone. There's another $30 million ding to your pocketbook as they ask for $100 billion Bravo dollars more. Maybe you can give up a little more food and travel to pay for it. Wait till the $300 billion Bravo dollar welfare queen Israel is reorganized into the Pentagon and controls your $1.5 trillion tango dollar military. The synagogue of Satan Zionist political movement won't need your measly $300 million Mike dollars in welfare subsidies after that. You think the costs are high now under a politically hobbled country? Wait until Israel takes control in law of the military, industrial, and digital infrastructure and the open secret Baal room national security basement additions. Yeah, keep being crickets and don't make your objections known and more loudly than your contented chirps. But don't be surprised at what that cricketude gets you in the very near to you future. The U.S. agreed to lift its naval blockade in stages while Iran agreed to make its best efforts to ensure free passage for commercial vessels through the strait for 60 days. But Trump couldn't go 60 days, as I predicted, because as climate change is not about the weather, Trump's ceasefire is a war to nowhere and is not about peace. There's too much profit to be made before he leaves office, and too many people to kill, and stuff to destroy, a lot of territory to steal, whether aiding the greater Zionist political project or developing the great Zionist real estate casino by the sea and water theme park development franchise with Trump's name on it. Right, Witkoff? How about it, Kushner? What say you, living memorial to an assassinated president, the Trump and John F. Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts? As an aside, did you know obstructing naturalization, i.e. immigration, was one of the causes stated in the Declaration of Independence for justifying separation? Now, where does that place the importance of the killings of two Americans protesting Trump's lawless interference in immigration and denial of due process in the infringement, if you think the pretty good assassinations by federal forces could have any merit? And how far gone Trump is in making America great in this post-founding Father Lincolnized government terrorism era, and how fashionably late to the party, tea or otherwise, we the people are. And Tehran isn't having Trump's no-class treatment. Iran condemns Trump's vulgarity during a new round of tensions. Iranian Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi has hit back at U.S. President Donald Trump after he called Iran's leadership scum and a violent people. The spat came as the United States resumed strikes in Iran in the most serious flare-up of hostilities since the country signed a preliminary peace framework last month. Quote, addressing the civilized and courageous nation of Iran with derogatory language does not diminish its greatness, close quote, Araghchi wrote on X on Wednesday evening. But it sure diminishes the people of America Trump is to faithfully serve. Quote, Iranians are known for our civility, culture, and strong moral values. We do not answer vulgarity with vulgarity, but with action, fearlessly and with great valor, close quote, he added. Although the diplomat did not mention Trump by name, Iranian state broadcaster Press TV said he was responding to the comment the U.S. president made earlier that day during a NATO summit in Turkey. Vulgar is a correct description of Trump's antics. Barbaric might be another one. Neither make America great again. The Mar-a-Lago Mauler's truly last class. And I think he's been caught up by the Iranians on this. So, Trump also says U.S. agreed to continue talks with Iran, but declares ceasefire over. U.S. President Donald Trump said on Friday, the United States has agreed to continue the negotiation process with Iran at Tehran's request, however indicating that the ceasefire is over. So magnanimous to deal with these scum, right? Quote, the Islamic Republic of Iran has asked us to continue talks. Continue to talk as more people die for the greater Zionist political movement project does not make a peace president. We have agreed to do so, but the United States has stated to them in no uncertain terms, the ceasefire is over, Trump said. On Truth Social. But the ceasefire was never actually on. So what's any agreement worth with Trump or the United States? It is a national disgrace. Does not make America too great. Overnight, into Wednesday, the U.S. forces launched a series of strikes on Iran. The U.S. Central Command claimed the move was in retaliation for Iran's actions against commercial vessels transiting the Strait of Hormuz. The Iranian forces reported retaliatory strikes on U.S. bases in Bahrain and Kuwait, while Tehran accused Washington of breaking the memorandum on the cessation of hostilities, because Netanyahu said no. All that MOU discussion and meetings and production expenses, vying for the greatest show on earth, talk and talk and talk and talks to nowhere good. The great taco vendor, or taco vendor, if you much, whether in word or deed, and you knows them when you sees them, right, Dr. Francis Lieber? And ever the victim, old Nick Deer, declares himself Iran's number one target, or the number one target of Israel, as long as Trump is numero uno, while holding all the cards, right? The U.S. president warned that he, quote, may be gone, close quote, as a result of the potential assassination attempt. Mr. P.T. Barnum Trump, it's not potential or attempted if in you're goned. Like, this broadcast has been gone by C. Rumble. There's no potential attempt about it. You're goned. But whatever, when Iran, right? You might want to look around your cabinet. No, not the drawers. Those losers, you're swimming in the swamp you made great again. Right, Charlie Kirk? It sounds like Trump's taken an MK Ultra suicide admission or doing an WWE SmackDown extravaganza promotion like Butler appeared when Iran was going to do it anytime. Trump made the remarks at an NATO summit in Ankara Wednesday after the U.S. struck dozens of Iranian targets in retaliation for alleged attacks on oil tankers in the strait. While the U.S. military accused Tehran of unwarranted aggressions, Iranian media, citing government sources, said that one of the tankers had ignored warnings, stressing that Iran should approve all passages. And so I read that part again just to show you this is all the same incident that I've been referencing, not just different pieces of information thrown together. Remember that Iran is also protecting itself against hostile shipping. That's why they have the rules set up. Following the attacks, Trump branded the Iranian leadership scum, sick, and cuckoo, declared the ceasefire over, and called the continued negotiation, quote, a waste of time, close quote. Projecting much, Trump? And remember, last month, Trump said he would be honored to meet the Iranian supreme leader, Ayatollah Mojtaba Khamenei, that he has a very good reputation, actually, Trump said. Is it any wonder national leaders can't trust Trump? Well, except to trust his resorts and casinos and last class look at me. No, not me. Trump's international thuggery. At the summit, Trump also alluded to the role the U.S. had played in the targeted assassinations of the Iranian leadership. Quote, they had leaders, they're gone. And they had another set of leaders, they're gone. Now they have another set of leaders, they may be gone, close quote, he said. U.S. president noted, I may be gone too, because I'm their number one target, close quote. Quote, that's the way they act, close quote, he added, claiming that he is doing, quote, what's right for the country, close quote. Well, if it's the way they act, have you considered Israel? Being you insulted Satanyahu, and if the Zionist front gets its Satanyahu-inspired Section 224 of the 2027 NDAA and the FUTURE Acts passed into legislation, American sovereignty is lost to the foreign terrorists, and that they don't need you, Nomo? And Adelson and AIPAC and their barbarian horde save a bundle? And when you say, what's right for the country? What country exactly? Because America and Man Street ain't seeing it. Over the past several years, Trump has been targeted in several assassination attempts. He was hit in the ear by a bullet fired by Thomas Matthew Crooks at a campaign rally in Butler, Pennsylvania in July 2024, an attack that killed one rally goer before Crooks was shot dead by a Secret Service sniper. But was he actually convicted? Was Crooks convicted of doing that, actually? But there it is, the loyal Butler that keeps on serving. Old Nick Deer's blood ritual and WWE SmackDown extravaganza, or MK Ultra programming and the sanitization op, right, Mossad? 2 months later, a man was arrested after being spotted with a rifle near Trump's golf course in Florida. But Iran still gonna done it with a sympathizer of the Zionist-supported Ukraine. Correct? This is how this game gets played? Because Trump is already using U.S. Air Force to fight for Israel, as I said long ago that he would, because remember, Trump's war to nowhere with Iran means nothing substantive to the United States that didn't exist before Trump's unwarranted aggression against Iran. U.S. wants no Israeli involvement in strikes against Iran. No, no, we'll do it. We're going to do it. The administration of United States President Donald Trump does not want to see Israel involved in the strikes against Iran amid renewed hostilities between Washington and Tehran, the media reported on Friday, citing two Israeli sources. I mean, they don't even need Section 224, it sounds like. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu would really want to join the U.S. strikes, close quote, but the U.S. doesn't want Israel involved at the moment. At the moment. Overnight into Wednesday, the U.S. forces launched a series of powerful strikes on Iran. The U.S. Central Command claimed the move was in retaliation for Iran's actions against commercial vessels transiting the Strait of Hormuz. The Iranian forces reported retaliatory strikes on U.S. bases in Bahrain and Kuwait, while Iranian authorities accused Washington of violating the memorandum on the cessation of hostilities. So you see, Iran's holding on to that. Trump says it's over. But it was never started. Trump's never going to be agreeable to any of it because he's really not calling the shots, is he? What Iran's trying to do is hold on to something. On Thursday, Israeli Defense Minister Israeli Katz said that the Israeli Defense Forces remained on high alert and was prepared to resume military actions against Iran if needed. On Wednesday morning, Trump said that the ceasefire with Iran was no longer valid. But no, again, no longer valid, never was. And speaking of the billionaire boys, insiders exploiting Trump's dump and pumping turmoil, well, you will pay one way or t'other. Oil prices have surged as tension between the U.S. and Iran flared again, raising fresh concerns over supply disruptions in the Middle East after Washington reinstated pressure on Tehran and resumed military strikes. The U.S. Treasury Office of Foreign Assets Control, the OFAC, on Tuesday revoked a 2-month sanctions relief license for Iranian oil following the reports of attacks on commercial tankers in Strait of Hormuz. U.S. forces also carried out a new wave of strikes against targets inside Iran overnight and Wednesday. September Brent crude futures rose as much as 6% on Wednesday. But, Bertha, as we just heard, some ships are not abiding the transit routes and procedures established by Iran so that it can monitor for hostile ships due to Trump's unwarranted aggression, unwarranted hostilities in his war to nowhere. Private profit to him and his billionaire boys and girls club that you, my listener, is likely not in. And if you're in, how about a donation to RLM? It'd be much appreciated. Thank you very much. Or maybe even consider buying my gold mining claim so I can escape the war to nowhere being committed and waged against me right now. A very similar acting condition. Juvenile delinquent criminals that decide that acting like stupid animals is better than actually solving a problem they create. And remember, that's private profit Trump says he doesn't know about because funds manage his wealth. To the tune, it turns out, increased that wealth by 30%, it's reported, since only this administration, Trump 2.0. Because he's immune, he says. The infallible one in chief, it would seem. On Wednesday, U.S. President Donald Trump told journalists that the ceasefire between Washington and Tehran was no longer... How many times are we going to hear this over all these stories? But old Nick Dear Trump said he would not prevent U.S. diplomats from holding talks, but did not believe they would produce any results. Well, because Netanyahu does not want peace, positive results. And those diplomats, so-called, or negotiators that want to negotiate, his developer billionaire family and friends, can still provide Trump the excuse to dump and pump turmoil from the Wall Street station, convenience store, and casino at the expense of Main Street. And speaking of the menace in the world, the truth is finally admitted. U.S. commanders ignored intelligence warnings before strike on Iranian girls' school. Senior U.S. military commanders ignored warnings that the intelligence on the targets in Iran was outdated as they rushed to compile strike lists at the start of the war, as even anyone behind the woodshed understood. Finally admitted. Citing sources familiar with the decision-making process, CNN said that the decision contributed to the deadly strike on an Iranian girls' school. And I guess we'll just look right past that the Trump administration just admitted to killing a bunch of children, 168 reported, 175 total in that, that it had been vehemently denying this whole time. At worst, it was a double-tap strike for evil measure, Israel genocide style, that no children would be left behind. 168 murdered, a pittance. Trump allowed to be murdered in Gaza for his international resort casino at Kushner Water Theme Park by the sea. How do you feel about that, First Lady Melania Trump, with your professed concern for the children directed to Putin, who did nothing and could decide nothing, that the U.S. installed and supported Ukraine regime had already committed and commits and then blamed on Russia? And what happened to all that there anyway? That letter you sent, and those children. Now add Gaza and Iran to your concerns about those dead children, please. The bombing in which 120 students aged 6 to 13 were killed in addition to 36 adults happened on February 28th, the opening day of the U.S.-Israeli military operation against Iran. According to the broadcaster, messages embedded in the Pentagon's targeting system warned that the intelligence on some strike sites was based on years-old information and required verification before locations could be approved for the attack. The warnings were overridden for, quote, expediency, close quote, as commanders sought to accelerate the approval of strike options, CNN cited three sources familiar with the decision-making process as saying on Tuesday. Sounds like it's expedient to kill people, too, with ICE, doesn't it? Seems like an administration plan. Secretary of War Pete Hegseth announced a formal investigation in March. CENTCOM Commander Brad Cooper said in May that the findings would be made public once the inquiry is complete. Behind the woodshed, we already had the answer, didn't we? According to CNN, the U.S.'s military officials, quote, knew within days how the mistake happened. One of those sources told the outlet that, quote, it was obviously old info, close quote. Bloomberg reported last month that the Pentagon investigation was complete in April and found the strike resulted from gaps in the military targeting system. According to the outlet, the U.S. intelligence analysts identified the Manab site as an elementary school rather than an Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps naval facility in 2019. But the updated assessment never reached the military commanders because it was entered into a digital intelligence tool that was not linked to the Pentagon's official targeting database. U.S. What happened to Doge? U.S. Oh, he was given information at AI Grok, wasn't it? Yeah, targeting information. What happened to that? U.S. President Donald Trump said last month that the actual culprit behind the strike in Manab may never be established. But the Iranians are the scum, cuckoo, sick, vicious, and violent people. I said at the time behind the woodshed that he had no right to make such a claim before any investigation began, and that the denial likely pointed to the fact that the liar in chief knew but needed time to either work out the excuse or hope people forgot. The Iranian people, the ones that matter most in your Satan Yehu Judeo-Christian woke war to nowhere, didn't and won't forget the treachery of the deceiver-in-chief or the agency of the great Satan. Quote, there was missiles flying all over the place, and it's horrible what happened. Somebody said it was our missile. Maybe it wasn't our missile, but I have seen nothing to lead me to believe it was, Trump said. And despite a freeze frame from a video of one of the U.S. Tomahawk missiles that caused it, you can just see Trump waving his arms and hands as he described the trust me, bro moment. Quote, missiles flying all over the place and it's horrible what happened, close quote. Yeah. Now go ask the teachers and the mothers and fathers or other family members of the sons and daughters you and your regime killed how horrible it was, if you didn't kill those in your double-tap strike. Iranian officials have described the attack as a war crime and a crime against humanity and demanding accountability. And there is the rub, isn't there? The actual accountability seems like a global problem for all peoples on the earth. Accountability against people in government gone bad, doesn't it? We're all suffering the same problem of the world. And on those crimes against humanity, the CIA's sickest secret may finally be exposed. New MKUltra hearings have reopened questions about victims' destroyed files and experiments America never answered for. A decorated U.S. Air Force serviceman with no history of violence suddenly abducted, raped, and murdered a 3-year-old girl. When a search party found Jimmy Shaver wandering near San Antonio, Texas, he appeared to be in a trance, unable to explain where he was or how he had gotten there. After his arrest, he reportedly failed to recognize his own wife when she visited him in jail. Until the moment he was executed 4 years later, Shaver insisted he had no memory of committing the crime for which he had been sentenced to death. More than 70 years later, some researchers believe his case may have been linked to one of the CIA's darkest Cold War programs, MKUltra. MKUltra. The covert project that sought to manipulate, erase, and ultimately control the human mind through drugs, hypnosis, and psychological experimentation. That possibility returned to the spotlight on June 30th when the U.S. Congressional Task Force on Declassification of Federal Secrets reopened one of the intelligence agency's most notorious chapters. Lawmakers pledged to uncover the truth behind MKUltra, the illegal human experimentation program through which the CIA developed and tested psychotropic drugs and interrogation techniques designed to alter behavior, memories, and perception. Whether the hearing lives up to those promises is another question, but the testimony presented before Congress suggested that more than 60 years after MKUltra officially ended, many of the program's darkest secrets may still remain hidden. Congress promises again. That's right. Effectless promises, promises and again without accountability. Let's hear how accountability will likely slip by again. A task force chair, Anna Paulina Luna, left little doubt about the gravity of the allegations. Quote, administering drugs to people without their consent, subjecting humans to psychological torture, using prisoners and hospital patients as non-consenting research subjects, these are crimes against humanity, some of the worst, most notorious crimes of the 20th century, close quote, she declared in her opening remarks. How much less the great Covey swindle. Quote, the American people deserve the complete record. The victims and their families deserve acknowledgement, accountability, and justice. No one went to prison. No one was ever compensated by the government for the harm they caused, close quote. The language was uncompromising, yet it was also strikingly familiar. Nearly half a century ago, Congress opened another investigation in MKUltra, promising victims that the full truth would finally emerge and that those responsible would be held accountable. Those commitments quietly faded away. The victims were never fully identified, compensation never came, and many of the program's records were presumed lost forever. Tom O'Neill, author of CHAOS, Charles Manson, The CIA, and the Secret History of the 60s, reminded lawmakers that they were retracing a path Congress had already walked once before. During those same hearings, committee members like yourselves promised the victims of MKUltra would be identified, compensated, and provided lifetime medical care, he told the panel. Quote, none of that ever happened, close quote. According to O'Neill, lawmakers in the 1970s accepted one of the CIA's most consequential claims with remarkable little scrutiny that after more than 2 decades of secret experimentation, the agency had simply failed to mastermind control. CIA officials repeatedly insisted that, quote, their 25-year effort to learn how to control the human mind had been a colossal failure, close quote. O'Neill believes that conclusion deserves to be revisited. For years, he has argued that the historical record tells a very different story, one that Congress never fully examined and that may have been deliberately obscured by the destruction of key evidence. To make the case, he turned not to speculation, but to documents exchanged between two of the central figures behind CIA's most secretive experiments, the blueprint for mind control, to support his argument that Congress never uncovered the full scope of MKUltra, O'Neill pointed to a cache of correspondence that, in his view, fundamentally changes our understanding of the program. The letters were exchanged between psychiatrist Louis Julian West, who, quote, sought to control the minds of people without their knowledge, with the ultimate goal of creating programmed killers, close quote, and Sherman Grifford, the pseudonym used for Sidney Gottlieb, the CIA's chief poisoner who designed and oversaw MKUltra from its earliest days. Far from describing a failed scientific curiosity, O'Neill argued the documents laid out an extraordinarily ambitious blueprint for manipulating the human mind. The open letter, written by West in 1953, quote, outlined the objectives, methods and intended outcomes of experiments he'd hoped to conduct on unwitting human subjects, close quote. Quote, it reads like a page torn from the research notebook of Joseph Mengele, close quote. O'Neill told lawmakers comparing the proposals to the infamous Nazi doctors' experiments at Auschwitz. According to the correspondence, West proposed conducting experiments on, quote, unwilling subjects, close quote, including members of the military, psychiatric patients, prisoners of civilian jails, and special subjects identified by the CIA. His methods range from administering psychedelic drugs, including LSD, to combining them with hypnosis in an effort to induce trance states, confusion, amnesia, and other artificially created psychological conditions. The ultimate objective extended far beyond studying human behavior. West envisioned techniques that could extract information from unwilling subjects, implant false memories, and alter the beliefs, attitudes, and loyalties of individuals who had previously remained resistant to interrogation or manipulation. Let me just interject before I go further. You're hearing like the internet here. You're hearing the current technology now. Digital, able to affect your brain without you knowing it, preparing you, as I've been talking all these years. The blueprint also revealed how carefully the operation was designed to remain invisible. Funding would be disguised, institutional links concealed, and even many of West's scientific and military colleagues kept unaware of the true nature of the research. According to O'Neill, Gottlieb responded enthusiastically. If the correspondence accurately reflected the CIA's ambitions, it suggested that MKUltra was never merely a loose collection of bizarre experiments. It was an organized effort to develop practical methods of psychological control while shielding the entire enterprise from public scrutiny. The case that should never have happened. For O'Neill, Jimmy Shaver's aforementioned case illustrates those ambitions more vividly than any surviving document. An extraordinary crime unfolded just 1 year after Gottlieb's approved West proposal. Before the murder, Shaver had been undergoing experimental treatment for severe migraines at the Air Force hospital where West headed psychiatric services. West himself later appeared as the court-appointed psychiatric expert during the proceedings. Shaver was convicted and sentenced to death. Until his execution in 1958, however, he maintained that he had absolutely no memory of committing the crime for which he had been condemned. O'Neill does not present the case as a definitive proof of CIA mind control. Rather, he argues that the extraordinary overlap between Shaver's unexplained behavior, his treatment under West supervision, and the psychiatrist's own proposals for inducing amnesia altered mental states demands far closer scrutiny than it has ever received. For him, the case raises the same uncomfortable possibility that has shadowed MKUltra for decades, that some of the program's most consequential experiments may never have been acknowledged, let alone investigated. That is precisely why O'Neill concluded, Congress should resist accepting the historical record at face value. Quote, nearly 50 years ago, another committee investigating MKUltra believed it had been told the truth about the program, close quote. He told lawmakers, quote, it had not, close quote. Instead, he urged the task force to undertake, quote, a thorough reexamination of what this program accomplished, what Congress was told, and what may still remain hidden, close quote. A trail deliberately erased. If O'Neill challenged Congress to reconsider what MKUltra achieved, journalist and historian Stephen Kisner focused on different question, why so much of the program remains unknowable. Kinzer is the author of Poisoner in Chief, widely regarded as the definitive biography of Sidney Gottlieb. He told lawmakers that even after years of research, he believes only a fraction of the story has been uncovered. Quote, I am painfully aware that I have discovered only a small portion of what Gottlieb did and what MKUltra was, close quote, he said. At the heart of the project, Kinzer argued, was an ambition far more radical than simply improving interrogation techniques. In its quest to, quote, implant a new mind into someone's brain, close quote, the CIA first sought to, quote, destroy the mind that was there already, close quote. To pursue that objective, MKUltra experiments spread across prisoners, psychiatric hospitals, university brothels, and CIA safe houses. By any modern standard, Kinzer argued, many of those experiments amounted to medical torture. The victims, he noted, occupied a special category inside the CIA. Quote, they were called expendables, close quote. Kinzer said, human beings who would not be missed if they disappeared, close quote. According to Kinzer, Gottlieb effectively operated with, quote, what amounted to a license to kill, close quote. Even today, no one knows how many people were subjected to MKUltra experiments, nor how many died as a result. Yet Kinzer argued that focusing solely on Gottlieb risks misunderstanding how the program actually functioned. The CIA senior leadership is said deliberately gave Gottlieb extraordinary freedom while maintaining enough distance to later deny institutional responsibility. Quote, this was a way for the CIA to deny its institutional role in MKUltra, close quote, Kinzer argued, quote, and to portray it misleadingly as the product of one man's sadism or excessive zeal, close quote. If that strategy succeeded, it was only because another decision made the historical record even harder to reconstruct. As public scrutiny intensified during the 1970s, Gottlieb and his superior CIA director Richard Helms ordered virtually all MKUltra files destroyed. For decades, that decision has been treated as the moment the trail went cold. Despite the destruction order, thousands of previously overlooked MKUltra documents were later discovered hidden among the CIA financial records by an agency analyst. Quote, that same diligence could bring results today, close quote, he told lawmakers. For Kinzer, the surviving files suggest that historians may still know only a fraction of what remains buried inside the agency's vast archives, the death that still haunts MKUltra. If Congress decides to press further, Kinzer suggested, one of the first places to begin would be the mysterious death of Frank Olson. Officially, Olson was an Army scientist who committed suicide by jumping from the window of a New York hotel in November 1953. And I hear that happens in Russia frequently, too. This is BTWRLM 676. In reality, Kinzer reminded lawmakers Olson was secretly working for the CIA and had become deeply involved in MKUltra. Shortly before his death, Olson had reportedly expressed growing moral reservation about the program and indicated that he wanted to leave it. His death has remained controversial ever since. Quote, evidence suggests that his death may not have been a suicide, close quote, Kinzer said. Sound familiar, folks? If undisclosed CIA records still exist, he argued, they could finally clarify one of the agency's most enduring Cold War mysteries. But Olson's case is important for another reason. Rather than viewing it solely as an unresolved historical episode, Kinzer urged lawmakers to ask a broader, a potentially more unsettling question. Was MKUltra truly buried with the Cold War? Or did it simply evolve into something else? Did MKUltra really end? MKUltra officially came to an end in 1963 after years of secret experimentation failed to produce the breakthrough its architects had sought. Sidney Gottlieb himself ultimately concluded that, quote, there is no such thing as mind control, close quote. Kinzer does not dismiss that assessment. Instead, he argues that it reflected the technological limits of its time. Quote, even if he was right, close quote, Kinzer told lawmakers, quote, he may have been right only at that time, close quote. Since MKUltra's closure, neuroscience, cyber technology, and artificial intelligence have advanced in ways Gottlieb could scarcely have imagined. Those developments, Kinzer argued, raise an uncomfortable possibility. Rather than asking only what MKUltra accomplished during the Cold War, Congress should also consider whether the technologies available to intelligence agencies today have reopened questions the CIA failed to answer decades ago. Quote, covert agencies may have access to tools for mind control that Sidney Gottlieb could never have imagined, close quote, Kinzer warned. He urged the task force to consider whether, quote, some new incarnation of MKUltra exists today, close quote. That'd be total information awareness dominance, wouldn't it? Military doctrine of perception management in the cognitive battle space, psychological operations, and behavioral control. Sound like a new incarnation quite fits there, doesn't it? For Kinzer, revisiting the history of the program is therefore about more than establishing the historical record. Quote, it has a chance to connect the past to the future, he said. It could help prevent the emergence of the 21st century MKUltra that could be even more destructive than the original, close quote. One last chance. Whether Congress succeeds where previous investigations failed remains an open question. Chair Ana Paulina Luna closed the hearing by arguing the lawmakers have, quote, a constitutional obligation to ensure the CIA never does this again, close quote. I guess I'll just rebrand it, reorganize, move it on over somewhere else. Maybe to another country that you then onshore into your military. She also revealed that she had frequently visited CIA headquarters in Langley, where officials told her previously unseen MKUltra records are currently being prepared for declassification. That disclosure may prove to be the hearing's most significant outcome. Nearly 50 years ago, Congress also promised victims and their families that the full truth about MKUltra would finally come to light. Those promises were never fulfilled. Today's task force has pledged to finish what its predecessors began. Whether it succeeds may ultimately depend on the simple question, how much of the story still remains locked inside of the CIA's archives? And I would say just any information that's been locked could not have been brought justice at all, could not brought any information sufficient because it was all classified, the stuff they don't want people to see. And speaking of governmental crimes against mankind, while exposing the faceplant of fascism, U.S. states seek $1.4 trillion tango dollars from Meta. Mark Zuckerberg's company has been accused of designing Facebook and Instagram to addict children and teenagers. California, Colorado, Kentucky, and New Jersey accused Meta of deliberately designing its platforms to keep children and teenagers hooked while misleading the public about the app's safety, the company said in a court filing on Monday. Was it MKUltra that we're looking at here? MKUltra here? At a court hearing last month, four states said that they had collected the proposed penalties by estimating the number of young users affected and applying fines allowed under state law. The $1.4 trillion tango dollar figure was disclosed by Meta in a legal response to the state's request on how damages should be calculated. Meta has rejected the estimate as legally unfounded. Quote, a sanction of that size has no analog in the history of consumer protection enforcement, close quote, the company's lawyers wrote in the court filing. Mark Zuckerberg's firm also called the plaintiff's, quote, outlandish calculations, close quote, baseless, and vowed to continue fighting the lawsuit. Now, I wonder whether any of the faceplant crew laughed at the Alex Jones billion-dollar judgment. A California Attorney General's office spokesperson defended the case, saying it alleges that Meta, quote, has prioritized profits over the safety of kids and fueled the mental health crisis we see impacting a generation of American children, close quote. The office said it looked forward to, quote, holding Meta fully accountable, close quote. Okay, accountability for the safety and medical or mental well-being of Americans. Great, fantastic. Now do the perpetrators of the great Kobe swindle that is impacting American generations to come, if not forever. Oh, and do the Epstein files too, you hypocrite government exploiters of the children, we the people, and all things you are duty-bound to have and to hold and to keep sacrosanct. And then there is this earth-shaking finding, an ex post with a video and a document from Secretary Kennedy attached. It was posted by Nicholas Holscher, MPH, from the McCullough Foundation. Four studies confirm sudden infant death syndrome from vaccination is real. Now, I'm reading a post. Please go get the information. Read it all for yourself. Qualify all this. I thought there was enough here. You need to know. I found something else looking a little bit through this. I'm going to finish reading here, though, that when I told you early on to read the product inserts, apparently someone went and did and found out the DTaP vaccine now says it causes or could cause autism and sudden infant death syndrome. So we get back to this. The studies find a link between vaccines and death. The journal Cartel deletes them. So you have to go search these out. Research the names. The Miller case is 1,048 SIDS cases identified in VAERS. 75% occurred within 1 week of vaccination. Number two is Holscher et al. Hundreds of infant and toddler deaths within weeks of MMR vaccination identified in VAERS. 24% were classified as SIDS. Number three, the Hooker et al. Louisiana Department of Health death records show infants vaccinated at 2 months are 68% more likely to die in the following month than in unvaccinated infants. Girls had 112% higher odds. Number four source, Goldman et al., vaccines likely cause SIDS via brain stem failure. Immature infant livers fail to clear toxic vaccine ingredients, triggering inflammation and brainstem dysfunction that can lead to sudden death during sleep. Then the censorship began. The Miller study was removed from the scientific record 5 years after publication following an anonymous, quote, post-publication concerns, close quote. Our MMR vaccine death study was removed from ResearchGate for posing, quote, a threat to public security and public health, close quote. Hooker study was removed from preprints without any explanation. Science isn't supposed to disappear because the findings are inconvenient. The suggestion here, it's time to invoke the RICO Act, R-I-C-O Act, against the journal Cartel. The medical profession isn't what people were told, and now private equity is squeezing harder to provide even less. So get informed. It's time to get you behind the woodshed now. Again, seeing the insert, given that it was a picture of the insert, seeing SIDS and autism in the product insert for a harm, potential harm, qualifies all those right there. Don't need to really read more. Go read the product inserts very carefully. If not, do go find those reports and track them down. You know, on these crimes against humanity, so-called, little monsters out there, cancer cases to soar worldwide. Can I read that again? Prediction. Cancer cases to soar worldwide, says the WHO. Who? No, not the rock group, the owl, the little people from Whoville, but the World Health Organization predicts the cancer cases to soar. How can they do that, folks? The world's second leading cause of death is expected to affect more than 90% of the people by 2050, either through their own diagnosis or that of their close relative. What happened to the doctors? To compare, about 1 in 5 will develop cancer in their lifetime globally, which translates to approximately 20% of the population. Now, what could have caused this change to such an increase at warp speed? Trump, you got any ideas? Any at all? New cancer cases are projected to nearly double worldwide by 2050, with the disease expected to affect more than 90% of the global population in some way. The WHO, not the rock group, the OWL, or the little people from Whoville, Horton, but the World Health Organization has warned. How do they know, folks? In a report released on Wednesday, the agency said cancer remains the world's second leading cause of death after cardiovascular disease, claiming more than 26,000 lives daily. It estimates there are currently nearly 10 million deaths and 20.6 million new cases annually, warning that without urgent action, the latest figure will rise to 35 million by 2050. 1 in 5 people is expected to develop cancer during their lifetime, with lung cancer remaining its deadliest form. Despite rapid advances in treatment, the WHO says survival increasingly depends on where patients live and their financial circumstances. 5-year survival for breast and childhood cancers exceed 85% in high-income countries, but falls below 45% in low-income nations, it estimates. 23 countries lack radiotherapy facilities, 2/3 do not include cancer care in universal health coverage, and treatment costs force up to 90% of the patients in some regions to abandon care. And the scum over in Iran, they all have the radiotherapy and they give it to their people. Do you know that, Trump? Overall, at least 45% of the patients face financial hardship, making cancer a leading cause of medical bankruptcy worldwide. And that's the plan. In this non-spectator sport arena, it's up to you to plan differently. The agency estimates that if current trends continue, cancer will affect 92% of people worldwide at some point in their lives by 2050, either through their own diagnosis or that of a close relative. And I need to interject here. I've been saying this over and over because they're saying in the article, don't let this program you into disease. You put your mind on a better level, better frequency, do what you need to do. Don't take what they're saying here for real and do your best to stay away from it. The WHO urged governments, international organizations, and the private sector to adopt a people-centered, these warm and fuzzy useless terms. Isn't caring for the health of the patient already supposed to be people-centered? Well, that's sort of a trick question because corporations are people too, don't you know? Now what does that statement from the global pharma broker mean? The WHO urged governments, international organizations, and the private sector to adopt a human-centered approach to integrating cancer services from prevention to diagnosis and treatment into universal health coverage, strengthening support for patients and caregivers, and ensuring research and innovation expand access to treatment. Oh, so for patient and caregivers is in the list of what people-centered is expected to do, meaning people-centered is, by this global medical scare promotion, providing the limited liability to the medical services corporations and doctors to rely on to offer more expensive, innovative services to exploit and further profit from the harms caused by the prior death care interventions, such as the Great COVID Swindle, because the WHO says so. People-centered, where corporations are people too, when spoken about by the global pharmaceutical broker, means corporate-centered exploitation and profit. If they are speaking to people, as in patient-centric, why the general promotion to HARMA? Dozens of countries are currently developing cancer vaccines using different approaches. So Russia considers cancer a communicable infectious agent that a vaccine can stop transmission? Russia has been actively working on personalized mRNA cancer vaccines tailored to individual tumors. Two experimental therapies, two experimental therapies, Neo-Oncovac for melanoma and Oncopept for colorectal cancer, were cleared for clinical use in March. And that Oncopept certainly sounds like a peptide therapy, not a vaccine. More than 40 patients have since enrolled, with the first recipients already showing a strong immune response. But immune response does not prove cure. And pursuant to local communicable disease law, no substance is considered a vaccine unless it stops transmission of a natural infectious agent. The vaccines are expected to be provided free under Russia's national health insurance system once their clinical effectiveness is confirmed. So Russia considers cancer a communicable infectious agent, it sounds like. Or are we identifying the conflation from acceptance of the therapies with vaccines for wider acceptance? The US, UK, Cuba, and China are also pursuing cancer vaccine development through, quote, approved treatments, clinical trials, or personalized mRNA platforms. So cancer, again, is an infectious agent by this. Was the great COVID swindle using the same technology and approved death and harm-causing treatment? Sure was. So commenced the pharmaceutical gene therapies that started the cancers, but as I reported a couple of episodes ago, now new, improved, and AI or pronation enhanced direct to DNA, right? And as to give death the 1-2 knockout punch, have you heard about the yet experimental, innovative, novel therapy using a synthetic antibody, a type of lab-generated protein treatment called Vitro-2 that purports to address the first leading number one killer cardiovascular disease? So easy, so effective, so free in Russia. Vitro-2 is a one-dose arterial plaque remover that uses CRISPR-Cas9 gene editing tech to permanently alter your DNA, causing permanent, unknown, unintended consequences, technology DNA alterations in one dose where there is no going back if there's a problem. What could go wrong? Maybe the militarized great Kobe swindle is a clue. 85% of the population eventually succumbed to the propaganda. Now we're told 92% of the population will eventually suffer cancer by 2050. It's only 20% now, we're told. But was that 20% estimate from before 2020 or after 2020? I didn't have time to check. And where medicine causes death, labs claim to create life. But more like they create death at warp speed. Researchers take big step toward making synthetic life. Lab-grown, quote, spud cells, close quote, mimic growth, replication, and division. Scientists in Minnesota say they've built something from scratch that's not alive, but behaves like it was. Synthetic biologist Kate Adamala and her team created spud cells, tiny wobbling spheres assembled from non-living chemicals that can grow, copy their synthetic DNA, and split into offspring, according to research posted online. Unlike earlier efforts that tweaked existing organisms, these cells were constructed from the ground up, using liposomes filled with lab-made DNA and surrounding chemical soup that provides energy and the machinery to make proteins. Sound familiar in a COVID swindle kind of way? They're believed to be the first synthetic cells to complete the growth and division cycle. They're fragile, short-lived, and heavily dependent on their environment. Other researchers say they are far from being a living cell since they can't divide over more than a few generations. They also can't evolve, though they can mimic evolution with faster growing versions created by inserting a genetic mutation overtaking slower ones. Quote, life is not binary, close quote, Adamala tells the New York Times. Quote, that's why I'm hesitant to call this alive. There's no clear line as much as we would love it to be, close quote. Supporters called the work a huge, huge step forward, understanding how life becomes life. Didn't the chemicals become life? It doesn't even happen. And towards eventually designing tailor-made biological factories for drugs, fuel, or food. In theory, synthetic cells could also draw huge, huge amounts of carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. The research is being reviewed for publication in a scientific journal. Adamala and collaborators are launching a non-profit research institute, Biotic, to push the cells toward what co-founder Drew Edney of Stanford University describes as an, quote, operating system for life, close quote. Endy compares spud cells to the Wright brothers' early plane. Quote, the Wright brothers' flyer flying for 12 seconds doesn't get you a 737, close quote, he tells the Times. Quote, this is just the beginning, close quote. Why the name spud cells? Quote, I'm Polish, Adamala says. I'm mostly made of potatoes, close quote. She says colleagues initially wanted to name the creation after her, but she told them, quote, call it something that's not my name. Call it a potato for all I care. And if that isn't alien sounding enough, maybe the Brazilian government is trying to tell us Earthlings something. Humans, we have arrived. Brazilians receive alien invasion alerts. Thousands of Brazilians in a number of states were shocked and puzzled by emergency alerts sent to their cell phones in the middle of the night, some containing gibberish, while others warned them to brace for an imminent alien attack. Or maybe not. Or maybe a Trump invasion. He's an alien in Brazil, isn't he? The false alarms were sent between Friday night and early Saturday morning through Brazil's Civil Defense Alert platform, a system normally reserved for serious warnings about floods, landslides, storms, and other emergencies. People in several cities were awakened by extreme alert notifications containing the word misanthropy, meaning hatred or distrust of humanity, while others received messages that sounded less like a public safety advice and more like an opening scene of a low-budget sci-fi film. Protect yourself! Alien attack! Humans, we have arrived, read the messages received by some residents in Belo Horizonte, the capital of Minas Gerais state, according to G1 Global. Another version warned of a supposed tornado in the metropolitan region. The agency said the system had been taken offline at 1:30 a.m. on Saturday after an unauthorized third party remotely triggered alerts to several regions of the country. The federal police launched a probe as technicians worked to restore the platform. For the many Brazilians, the first response was not concern, but memes. Others were less amused, noting that the same alert system is supposed to warn people of real disasters and that a false extreme message in the middle of the night could easily cause panic. Vince, easily cause panic. Yeah, that's right. Until it's real. The incident came at an awkward cosmic moment. Just days earlier, the Pentagon released another batch of declassified files on unidentified anomalous phenomena, the official term for UFOs, including witness accounts, photos, and videos of unexplained objects. That release, however, came with the usual caveat that unexplained does not mean extraterrestrial. The Pentagon has maintained that the material contains no confirmed evidence of alien life, alien technology, or a government cover-up. As always, behind the woodshed, you be the judge. And speaking about faraway places and shaking up humanity, another type of earthquake, and I think we have just here witnessed, now it's a week or so late getting to it, but I think we just witnessed, or at least those of us watching, an historic terrestrial event. And you may have heard, two quakes shake Venezuela, buildings collapsed in Caracas during back-to-back quakes. And to my knowledge, I've been watching many, many years, lots of decades, this is a very rare event. And at least in my lifetime, I've never seen two greater than seven earthquakes hit so close together, essentially the same place relative to the size of the Earth. But these were actually something else, and I'm not sure many, if any, are aware of it. This was a much more massive event. Now, I've heard people talking about it. They could see the correlation, but I'm not talking from an idea you see the correlation of earthquakes at the same time around the globe, all at the same time, or relatively so. This was more correlated to what I have found before that connected them. And this becomes even something even much more likely, much more rarer. An event that mapped a much larger system that I've been watching for decades or near ever, way back in high school, right before high school. I was doing this look. Back-to-back powerful earthquakes slammed Venezuela on Wednesday evening, collapsing buildings in the capital, Caracas. The U.S. Geological Survey said the first earthquake had a magnitude of 7.1, and its epicenter was west of the community of Moron. I guess we say Moron. Located along the country's Caribbean coast, about 104 miles west of Caracas. The quake had a depth of 8 miles. And the other thing is, these are pretty shallow quakes as well. The USGS said an even larger quake, a 7.5 magnitude, hit just a minute later. The second quake had a depth of 6 miles, and its epicenter was 10 miles southwest of Moron. And that depth would predict catastrophic damage to anything not built well enough, and lots of things may not be built well enough. The quakes are among the strongest to strike Venezuela in more than a century, so it correlates to my not seeing it all this time, longer than I've been around, that it hasn't happened this strong. So there is a century of rarity relative to strength, and the pairing maybe even more, well, rare. Not a state, but you get my point. The U.S. Pacific Tsunami Warning Center issued a tsunami alert for the Virgin Islands. Authorities in the Dominican Republic also issued one for the island. Another alert for the Puerto Rico was quickly lifted. Whether you were listening right there, that fault that it hit on goes out into the deep ocean, and I don't think its movement was much of a lifting moment north. So that's why that was dropped, that tsunami alert was dropped. And I'll be interested to see video of wider spaces than what they're showing anymore here, the terrain, the land, how it moves. It's very interesting. We're watching cameras now that pick that up, so it's been very neat to watch. People evacuated swaying buildings in Caracas and remained outside, many visibly shocked as they saw entire walls that had collapsed, making furniture visible from the street. Dust columns could also be seen in two neighborhoods of the capital where restaurants and other businesses were typically busy. Interior Minister Diosdado Cabello said the quake could be felt in several states, adding that the Altamira neighborhood in Caracas had alarming situations with collapsed homes and buildings, suggesting people were injured in the earthquake, and asking motorists to give way to ambulances and other emergency vehicles. And I'm not sure what the number is now. It's jumped well over 3,000, I think, already, people dead from this. And at that point, the government was saying there's 50,000 people that are unaccounted for at that time. We urge people to remain outside as aftershocks could further damage some of the structures. The USGS said that based on data from the twin quakes and the types of structures common in the area, this is likely a major disaster with extensive damage and many casualties. Again, that was started out as a small number for a number of days along, but that number started to change drastically, and then it reached the point when people cannot survive longer without water, and that number even within 2 days the number was jumping. They're still finding some people, but that number of rescued people was very minimal at that point. And so the number of dead started to drop as they can start uncovering it. But there, again, the 50,000 people were unaccounted for even then. Around 30 minutes after the Venezuelan quake, a powerful earthquake struck off Japan's north coast. And this is where it got even more interesting for me. So as well as the coincidence, take note, it was in northern Japan. That becomes an anomaly relative to my quake reaction theory. And I've talked about this before. But as it happened, being in northern Japan, it makes the 5.6 earthquake in California relevant. Though not to my mind by intensity, the respective intensities that it should have been pre-Banda Aceh. And I almost didn't consider the California quake as not being big enough because of that. It's inside the noise. It's also reported to have occurred earlier than the Japan quake. And these are all within like 8 hours of themselves, all these. And then I realized that 5.6 is in the noise. It occurred to me. I haven't thought about this for years because Banda Aceh kind of stopped all the excitement to track them all down. Because of this problem, the earthquakes seem to go into the noise. 5.6 is in the band of like 5.2 to 5.7. And so I didn't understand at the moment until it occurred to me that it might be relevant. The California quake might be relevant to all of this. In fact, it appears things occurred in reverse order relative to my theory, and almost all immediately relative to the it would normally need days to propagate. The Japan quake had a preliminary magnitude of 6.9 and occurred off the eastern coast of Iwate, but there is no danger of tsunami, the Japan Meteorological Agency said. The quake had a depth of 30 miles, the agency said. The rattling occurred in an area where strong earthquakes have repeatedly been reported in recent months. Now, my theory, supported by multiple concurrences over time, many, many years, and despite it still currently being reported that no direct interaction between these events has been reported, is that if not the initial quake greater than 6.6, a secondary quake can be predicted thousands of miles away along certain seismic paths, not the ring of fire. These are across plates, but seismic pathways that are inside, mostly unknown generally, and they happen so many days later depending on the distance. For instance, that quake larger than 6.6 in northern Japan would consistently, pre-Banda Aceh, trigger a notable earthquake somewhere from northern California to British Columbia approximately 3 days later. Sometimes down in the middle California area, north. Anything above 7.0 earthquake would return a greater than 6.0 a few days later on the west coast, typically 3 to 4 in North America. An earthquake in southern Japan would go southwest instead and trigger an earthquake around Central America, roughly the Isthmus of Panama, to northern South America in about 4 days. And then looking at the map, if you look, you should intuitively see the timing correlation. It's almost the same speed. It just takes a little longer to get there because it's a little farther away. And once hitting the coast of South America, that energy would then turn due east across South America, reaching into the West Atlantic, with some quakes occurring just short of the great crustal spreading at the Atlantic Ridge. Again, I'm talking about from things I've tracked all these years watching. And this is just now being seen by some, that there's all this connection that goes through. It is not a fault system. It's a way that the energy travels through the crust. But apparently all this is not mainstream yet. There's no connection. And it's not much different, or if any different, that only major faults were known, even acknowledged back in the day, as I was starting to observe these things, that if science is going to hold, my logic was, if science is going to hold the theory of earthquakes occurring along these faults, then earthquakes must be identifying the location of faults, whether or not known, and however rare, and couldn't be disregarded. So I started mapping every earthquake the newspaper mentioned. Yes, no internet now. I said back in the day, newspapers I'd read at something called a public library, for those unfamiliar with such a place, that's a building with books and periodicals and other reading stuff. It also turned out, at the same time, unbeknownst to me, a guy with at least science creds to say so. He's a geologist. His name was Jim Birkeland, had been following and reporting on non-traditional indicators such as fluctuations in lost pet advertisements, animal behavior anomalies, and alignments of lunar and tidal cycles when he was predicting earthquakes. And he nailed quite a few. That's what got him on the map. Instead of the creds, I just waited for the earthquakes and mapped them, how I did it. Over a couple of years, though, the documentation and documenting those epicenters of even the very smallest quakes, the faults began to appear, places they weren't known to be. I identified beyond the two major approved faults, I identified six more faults under a major population and industrial center and in the foothills where houses were being built. But not a mention of them by the experts. And this is where I started to understand about paying attention, and you might be able to get more information than the experts might have. This all has subsequently been increased, and they had found two more after I left the area. There was more earthquakes, and someone did more studies, and they found a total of 8 extensive faults that had not been understood before that could erupt unexpectedly. The Earth's crust, she's all cracked up, don't you know? And years later, also unbeknownst to me, Birkeland observed the correlation to those unknown faults as well. And so a place that only had 2 faults, they ended up having like 8 or more. There might be more now. So again, I stopped looking when I moved from the area. And those only most recent ones were done because of the new activity. I think it was the new electronics technology they had to find them. They're very hard to see. But I'm a bit surprised they aren't a few more, even so. We're one to consider the Central Valley to be a big gouge. If you look at a map above, like you're flying above, and the Central Valley, California, is a big gouge caused either by a glancing impact or a meteor impacting at an angle, skipping. The faults being deep fractures from the impact that you can see it running up and down the California, and it splashes into Oregon. And not the same one, but we do have in northeastern Oregon, along mostly the periphery of what appears to be a more direct meteor impact, there's a valuable mineralization. Large area. You follow that impact area, and they're all fractured areas around the rim, and they're all mineralized, like hydrothermal venting coming up and depositing valuable minerals in them. And there's also precious stones and all that in different areas, all depend on how the energy came. But compare that now, the gold area in California next to the Central Valley, if you look above the California map, it's seen as a gouge of like a big wagon wheel rolled through the mud and shoving up the Sierra Nevada mountain range there. And in the same vein, maybe gold vein, decades ago, it didn't seem appreciated that these earthquakes are global triggering events that affect other places far away that are connected, but not by these fault systems. And what is interesting about the event that we just saw, the earthquakes occurred very near or at the terminus points of 2 distinct global seismic pathways, not fault lines, where the seismic energy goes through that I've mapped over time, but distinct. And they all erupted almost simultaneously. And I've never, ever seen that, ever. As an analogy, you stretch a long rope between 2 people and have each, within a short moment of each other, move their respective ends quickly up and down to cause a wave to travel along the rope. You know, now imagine those waves traveling across the crust of the Earth following an existing conductive or confined path. For instance, as here between Japan and Venezuela. That's a long rope, right? With 2 waves headed at each other. And it appears another 2 waves were going between the 2 by way of the 6.2 Middle East earthquake a few days later. That's even more interesting. And this is just like wave physics. This is not really hard to understand. Of interest as well, and too soon for my theory to exist as earthquakes, is that Hawaii mentioned earlier, though I couldn't find it after I noticed it, it was described well within the general earthquake noise that it could be disregarded in the initial reports. It registered a notable, though not large, 4.3 earthquake at roughly the same time, generally. We're talking, you know, there's an 8 hours difference, but I'm going to say that's all the same time here. All these earthquakes are going on at the same time along the seismic pathway. It's also that one to Hawaii is the southern seismic pathway that I've identified that goes from southern Japan. The northern one goes to North America. The southern Japan goes to South America through the Pacific Ocean, through the crust over the top of that. But you know, Hawaii sits there in the middle and it's a hot spot. Hawaii islands are because there's magma coming up there. And you watch, it's tracked. All those islands are because the crust moves. Well, irrespective of all that, these energy waves travel across this crust. And I'm watching all these points flare up all within a short time, almost immediately geologically. And if you look at the map of the epicenter in Venezuela, the coastline indent nearby delineates that fault. It goes into the Atlantic Ocean. And the rarity about this relative to my long-held theory, that relative to this response, is that in contrast to earthquakes happening across the globe in time as the wave traveling along a stretch rope some number of days after the triggering quake, there anything above 6.6 would do this, it seemed. These route termination areas went off relatively at the same time. The one question now of many, how will that energy wave impetus propagate and to where, if anywhere? And there were answers about that. That's what I was thinking at the time, because this ends up being, in my theory, the energy roughly dies out. It gets too noisy in the noise after about 6 to 7 days. And so I'm waiting now for time and watching this time going on. Where are these things going to pop up? Where do these waves pop up? And the Middle East one pops up. And that's very interesting still. Two directions got that one, from Venezuela across the Atlantic and then from Japan to the Middle East. Again, looking at that, we did get a correlation right down the coast, the North American coast, one earthquake after the other, all the way down to the Central America. And then there was one in Central America, and then that's about where the energy died. That's how many days it took to get all the back around. So the farthest forward into the future, I believe I could correlate, if not prove, the following response again, was that 6 days. That time came, I think it was a 7 days, and all that energy dissipated. It went way into the noise, that 5.2 to 5.6 Richter scale level. It's so many earthquakes happening in there, you really can't tell if they're originating or reflective or whatever, responding, sympathetic, whatever name you want to use it. And I did think I ran across someone who did notice that and got me rethinking about what happened after Banda Aceh. They noticed things were happening within that noise, and it called my attention to there. I had stopped looking. And so I then was able to reconsider the Banda Aceh quake. It changed the tensions of the crustal, it changed crustal tensions across the world to reduce the noticeable effects around the world. It was hiding the effect in the general noise of the other earthquakes, which I did mention at the time here on the network, the broadcast. That it might be that, but it didn't have any proof, it was too soon, of that fact of the drastic shift that Banda Aceh caused, the apparent lack of subsequent 6.0 to 6.9 earthquakes following 7 point or greater earthquake activity that was normal up until Banda Aceh. Now, scientists have said and will say there's no correlation and no connection. I saw that lack of correlation stop and then hide in the general earthquake noise. So something's there, whether the experts see it or not. But very impressive earthquake event here. It almost get me excited again thinking about it. Wow, this thing is really rocking and rolling. And I'm going to have to consider that series of close earthquakes one event relative to my theory and something I have never seen before. And I wonder, too, is this response of the Earth a readjustment to the Banda Aceh quake disruption? So there's lots really to study still on this. Sad to hear so many people have to die over such an interesting thing. the big trigger here on the termination points may have been another massive adjustment, a different one than the Banda Aceh, which allowed the waves to start to run again. And that interconnected circuits that went off all at once made that, you know, made that announcement. So what was the anomaly I mentioned earlier? Well, northern Japan affecting the west coast of North America and southern Japan affecting out to the Atlantic Ocean by way of Venezuela were not separate this time as they have been for decades before that I've been watching. All the ends of the circuits went off relatively at once. Where'd that energy go? What will it do? Anything? Is Hawaii a clue? Why does it matter? Well, I suppose it doesn't matter, but you might live in these areas far, far away, but connected, whether the experts agree or not, and despite what the experts say, knowing that these Earth dynamics just might allow you to anticipate trouble, giving you that precious small amount of time to react to save yourself instead of standing stunned in a building that falls around you, on remaining in a building like swallowed up by liquefaction of the ground you thought was solid, as we heard back in San Francisco many, many years ago. People didn't move. They stood in the building sank right into the ground. Luckily, the building held up. Didn't collapse. They just sank. They had to be cut out from the second floor. Those people didn't run. They didn't know to run. They didn't anticipate moving. A few seconds matters. So when you understand that your area may be connected, though the experts won't agree to it, to some place that just went off, maybe you'll be ready. You'll be one of the people. Also can safely record that action for scientific posterity instead of driving off or under a bridge that just collapsed. Now, what happens out there on the Earth can happen to us at home in just a few more days if we're in the right spot. My theory couldn't work to warn people until after the first quake larger than 6.6 occurred. So may not help us, but we're looking at a dynamic. And after that goes off, I could predict a danger of earthquakes days later from that epicenter in far-off lands in certain areas. And it's modeled roughly on a tsunami propagation, but it's in the crust. It doesn't move at the speed that you see scientists say. It's literally more closely travels like a tsunami speed. It could be anywhere from 300 to 600 miles an hour. And this was even more interesting when I looked at the speeds of these. So my theory, being sympathetic, except for one recent technological advancement and acknowledgement of this interconnected crustal reaction, would not have helped anyone in this current event, being they all happened at once or relatively so. But there was that time shift. There was that space. And that's an interesting thing, because this new technology happens to be that, what I, you know, don't be evil, Google, they may have done something very cool, although I don't necessarily like it, that Google, the surveilling Android that it is, it uses an accelerometer in every accessible phone as a sensor for an earthquake prediction system. Now, predicting, they predict and feel for the P wave generated by the quake, and the detection and analysis of which entered an alert to be sent moments before the Android users in Venezuela happened. Right, so they were just given enough notice. Now, except for yet another creepy proof, your every movement is monitored when the phone is not setting somewhere else. How cool is it that there was an earthquake alert system that might have given people those precious moments and heads up to prepare or get out of the way? Given that technology coupled with my theory, which is likely more common knowledge today as I'm noticing people seeing it, the response of things in areas, whether they're not connected or not, they're seeing the response. As soon as Venezuela was alerted, other quake-connected response areas in far-off lands, in this case Japan, and now we know the west coast of North America, particularly California, hit just before that, and despite the evidence suggesting they were separate before, to me, northern to southern in different directions, that would have been possible to alert everybody of the possible imminent damaging earthquake in moments. Again, but due to the rarity, more likely days, if there was just, as I was telling you before, depending on that distance of the epicenter. But moments, even this new system, and then triggered, just everybody who would be in a non-connected, connected spot was given notice. The people in Japan would have had 29 minutes before their earthquake to prepare. And unless it was the very first under the radar, so to speak, people in California with their lowly 5.6 would have known to stay out of the flying bottles and condiments section of their local grocery store. Part of the takeaway for us is then, even without the knowledge of the initiating catastrophic earthquake triggering or not sooner than the evening news, but far away from one, depending on wherever prone, the 6 days after did in fact produce those multiple earthquakes where they ought to have been, actually, as if like dominoes falling that traversed from the north to the south along the west coast, almost equidistant, very fascinating to watch the uniformity as well, from each other going down right down the coast. Also something I'd never seen correlated, the Middle East, that Middle East one receiving a 6.2 that was relatively properly placed between, in distance, between the larger Venezuelan quake and the smaller Japan quake. It was closer to Japan, farther from Venezuela when it struck the Middle East. That's something I've never seen either, across, crossing that rift. I've never seen it go across the Atlantic Ridge. And that indicates a great tension there across, hard pressed together, and the wave energy could cross it. And then in a couple of days later, after the causing the Middle East earthquake, that wave went all the way back to Japan. And a day later than that, being much further south, a 6.2 hit in North Maluku, Indonesia. It's all the same timing. It's all sequentially occurring in the proper time going along the earth. And these waves were traveling much slower, much slower than before the Banda Aceh quake. It's fascinating how slow they were actually going. And between the two Venezuela quakes and the tsunami-style speed did exist between those two quakes in a 39-second delay. It appears this great global reset was tectonic, not technocratic. A fascinating occurrence. The coming days may be more earth-shaking and on schedule. So be aware out there. This has been BTWRLM 676, and I'll be with you next week, Tech Diffs, or Nature Willing.
Echoes call, the hour is near. Behind the woodshed, the truth you'll hear. Every Sunday, the clock strikes three. Hal's voice rolls like thunder, piercing. By dose behind the woodshed, no stone unturned. House words ignite, the airwaves burn. Stand up, listen, it's time to learn. Behind the woodshed, where truths are earned. Law to liberty, the spectrum line in house court, no place to hide. A can of bass ready to burst for unspoken truths and unquenchable thirst. Behind the woodshed. No stone unturned, house words ignite, the airwaves burn. Stand up, listen, it's time to learn. Behind the woodshed, where truths are earned. So mark the time when Sunday comes. Behind the woodshed, beating drums. House voice, a beacon, fierce and bold. Then fight the truth. Truth's the ace. As the sun sets,
the truth still reigns in house words, freedom sings. Join us next week, heed the call behind the woodshed.